This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister and John Daly.
Hey, hey, hey. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday to you, too.
Did you just snort?
I did. I did a little snort, snort. Cute. It's Friday Eve. I'm a snorting kind of girl today.
That's in honor of the hybrid pig story coming up next. Or coming up soon. That's cute.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the After Party Live. Thank you for being here. Thanks. As you kind of trickle in from the Mark Thompson Show and other spots, please click the like button if you could. We appreciate that.
We're insecure. We need you to remind us that we're liked. Or maybe
we're
don't like
constantly
us.
In need of you to reiterate your love and support of the show. It's crazy how needy we are, right?
And it's funny. I feel like the more effort I put into not being needy, the more I feel like I sound
the more needy,
needy
you become.
Yeah. Mm. Maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Let us, shall we, jump right in to this first story.
Yeah. This is
I love these kinds of things. 2,000 years. The city of Pompeii.
Shenyun? I thought you're 2,000 years of glory.
2,000 years. No.
No, different. Yeah. Different 2,000 years.
2,000 years. The city of Pompeii has been covered by volcanic ash. And these frescoes lay beneath the ash, hidden from us for 2,000 years. You know Mount Vesuvius, it blew up, right?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
And it killed all the people and covered all the stuff and all the culture and all the things we knew about this. Well, more and more as we dig in, we're finding the coolest stuff.
Oh, wow.
So the frescoes were unearthed at the mansion of the House of Leda is where these workers
that
are.
That sounds fancy.
It is very fancy. They're doing restoration work in this area. And they have found these frescoes on the walls. One of them depicts a scene from the Greek myth Phrixus and his twin sister Hela as they fled their stepmother.
Hela? She's from Northern California?
Is H-E-L-L-E. Heli? Hela?
Oh, Hela?
Hele?
That would be funny, though, if her name was Hela.
Her name was Hela. Hela. She fled. They fled their stepmother, Ino, on a magical ram with golden fleece. So the fresco is amazing. The fresco is painted as if it were a framed picture hung on a yellow wall. Other frescoes uncovered depict still life images, and several portraits of women have also been newly revealed. This House of Leda, excavations there started in the 18th century. They started it again in 2018. They're trying to reconstruct a complete plan of this site. So that's a pretty big job. The frescoes are being cleaned to remove the volcanic ash that covered them, and then they're going to be restored. Along with the buildings, though, the bodies of the estimated 3,000 victims were perfectly preserved in everything they were doing and all their positions when this volcano...
everything they were doing in every position?
In every position. That's right. Imagine what you would want to be doing when the volcano comes.
Well,
right?
Think about it. If you knew the world was ending.
That's where I'd be. I'm telling you what.
Get into the position. Pick your favorite.
This happened. The frescoes were uncovered. And we've talked about this on the show right after... Three researchers won a $700,000 prize for coming up with a way to use AI to read scrolls that were also buried during the covering of Pompeii. So, yeah, look at that fresco.
That's a weird position.
It is a weird position.
I don't know what you call that.
This art, I mean, can you believe we're only just seeing it now?
Yeah, we've never seen anything like this.
No,
My initial research, it looks like it's pronounced Heli.
Heli? Yeah. Heli, Hela, Heli? All right. Heli it is. Sorry, I don't know the story of Heli, but I'm going to have to look it up.
Very cool.
The scrolls, by the way, were found in a villa thought to be previously owned by Julius Caesar's father-in-law, whose mostly unexcavated property held a library that could, they say, contain thousands more manuscripts. And so now that we supposedly have a way to read them, and unroll them without having them break into shards of, yeah. you know, that are lost to history. We could know more about music, food, how they enjoyed life's pleasures, the culture there, everything. So it's kind of exciting.
I could just imagine, you know, Julius Caesar's like, oh, the in-laws are coming over. In-laws, am I right?
That's right. That's right.
Very cool yeah. story. I like this. Yeah. You know what I also like?
What?
I like our contributors such as Wes Theory.
Wes! What's up,
$5,
Wes?
Right on time, right on schedule. Thank you, Wes.
I'm going to give him a heart.
Yes.
For Wes.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you so much. If you want to leave us a review and rate us on the Apple Podcast platform or Spotify or whatever platform you use, if you're on the audio podcasts, please do so. It'll help bump up the visibility of the show. That's our push right now. A lot of you have left reviews. Somebody left a very positive review, but hit 2 stars. Oh. So I'm hoping that was a mistake, but it brought our average down from 5 to 4.7.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So if you leave us a review, be careful with your stars, please.
Unless you think we're a 2-star kind of operation, in which case.
Yeah, we'll unless you're really stingy with your stars.
Yeah.
When I was an Uber driver for a while, I didn't realize until I worked for them that if you don't average 4 stars, they will take you off the platform.
Really?
And a lot of people are not generous with stars. A lot of people think 3 is good. 3 right. is not good. 3 will get your driver fired.
Wow.
So just keep that in mind. If you give anything less than a 4, it's actually a negative for the driver.
Regarding Pompeii, Heather says, I was so surprised at how expansive Pompeii is when I visited a few years ago. It's an amazing place. That's so cool that you've been there, Heather.
Yeah, I need awesome. To put that on my list.
Yeah.
And I need to check it twice. very cool. Next story is about, I knew it was coming. I thought it was going to be cancer, but it's not cancer, apparently. Diet drinks. Diet drinks may boost the risk of dangerous heart condition by 20%, according to a study.
Is it because of aspartame, or what is it?
I think it is. I think it's the artificial flavoring, or artificial sugar. Drinking 2 liters or more per week, oh, thank God I'm not doing that, of artificially sweetened beverages, the equivalent of a medium-sized fast food diet soda every day. Okay, don't do that. I'm between 0 and 1 a day. Raise the risk, and I'm talking about like a can, a 12-ounce, raise the risk of an irregular heartbeat called atrial fibrillation. Mm-hmm. You're familiar with that term. By 20% when compared to people who drank none, according to a new study, known as AFib, and you probably know it from all the commercials for medications. It is an irregular heartbeat often described by many people who have a quiver or a flutter or a flip-flop of the heart in your chest, which is the best place for your heart to be. Drinking a similar number of added sugar beverages raises the risk of the condition by 10%, while drinking about 4 ounces of pure unsweetened juices such as orange and vegetable juice was associated with an 8% lower risk of AFib, according to the study. This is the first study to report an association between no and low-calorie sweeteners and also sugar-sweetened beverages and increased risk of AFib. This is according to a professor emeritus at Pennsylvania State. While the study could only show an association between sweetened drinks and AFib, the relationship remained after accounting for any genetic susceptibility to the condition. A 2017 study found people with European ancestry had about a 22% risk of inheriting the condition. So, well, if I'm half European, maybe that's 11%.
I wonder if, because, I mean, there were years where I would drink that and more every day. I haven't had soda. Diet Coke since Jacob was born. So that's about 10 years now.
Oh, wow.
More than
that's
10
impressive.
Years. Thank See, here's you. My, because here's, I was totally addicted thing. To it. So that was my big thing. Like, I'm going to kick that to the curb. And I did.
Yeah, I have difficulty because drinking Coca-Cola as a child, like regular sugar Coca-Cola, I associate it with pizza. I associate it with Mexican food, burritos. I associate with certain foods. And I crave it when I'm having pizza. I crave it when I'm having Mexican food. And it kind of is that balance, you know, it's that biting, you know, kind of drink that complements these meals. And my rationalization, which is pure rationalization, and I've admitted that from the beginning, is that I'd rather forego the diabetes of drinking regular Coke, you know, the chances of getting diabetes,
sure.
for the chance of getting Diet Coke cancer, is how I referred to it in 20 years.
No.
But maybe it's not Diet Coke cancer, maybe it's AFib.
Because if you have a, you know, I don't know how often you eat pizza. But say,
when my mom makes her deep dish, which is like once a month or once every 2 months.
If you have one Coke, a can of Coke a month, I think
you're
that's
talking
a
regular
lot.
Sugar.
Like regular sugar, full on sugar.
The other reason I don't like it is because sugar gets on your teeth and it feels yucky. And I had issues with with that in dentistry.
I guess I'd rather drink the sugar than I would the chemicals.
Do you know how much sugar is in a can of Coke?
I mean,
it's like this much of the can is sugar.
Well, why don't you just drink?
And it also makes me feel ill because I don't eat sugar.
Drink the fizzy water. You get the carbonation.
I try. It's not the same. I mean, I do it and I go through periods of time where I'm able to do. But here's the other thing. The flavored fizzy waters are made with natural ingredients. And they won't tell us what that is.
No. They also won't tell you where they source the water. So is it like, where is it coming from? Yeah.
Yeah. I can understand if the orange flavor is like the oil of orange rind or whatever. But a lot of it's what you can what they categorize as natural flavor can actually be artificial.
Sure.
So I don't think there's any winning.
It's still probably better than aspartame and full sugar.
Yeah, but you also have these studies that say it didn't cause any problems. So, in 20 years of that. So I don't know.
I've got my Coachella Valley iced tea and I'm feeling pretty good about
it. My other rationalization is all my friends are doing, Coke, other different kind of Coke and doing different things. And I'm like, you know what? If this is my vice, a can of Coke Zero every once in a while, I'll take my risk.
What kind of friends are you hanging around with? I don't know.
I worked as a bartender for a very long time. I live in the city. Why. Let's just be real.
Let's move on to our animals.
Let's move on before we get demonetized.
Animals on the After Party Live, sponsored by Pamela Kirby.
Pamela Kirby. Pamela Kirby. Yeah, thank you, Pamela. You're our hero right now. Mm-hmm. The show has had declining views and contributions, although we appreciate everybody who has contributed. You're keeping the show alive. So thank you so much. Mm-hmm. But Pamela wanted to throw down 50 and bring attention to a group. It's called the Ventana Wildlife Society. They monitor, this is really cool, Cam, you'll like this. They monitor the California condor population.
Oh, I love that, yeah.
Is that cool? You can find out more information about Ventana at Ventana, that's V-E-N-T-A-N-A, and then W-S, which stands for Wildlife Society. So VentanaWS.org. A lot of great information on that website. Again, it's Ventana, V-E-N-T-A-N-A-W-S.org.
Oh my gosh, I have to show you the website. I just went to it because you told me to.
And that's look the idea. At the, thank you.
You're welcome. look at that. That's cool.
Yeah. So yeah.
It looks like they do some good work conserving native wildlife and habitat since 1977. I love that she put her money to the sponsorship and the furthering of people knowing about the Ventana Wildlife Society, contributing to us and a nonprofit at the same time. It's like a double whammy. That's cool.
Very cool. So yeah, if you want to sponsor a segment of the show, any contribution, $50 and over via PayPal, just make a note of that and we'll figure that out for you. So thank you so much, Pamela, for sponsoring this animal segment. And here we go. First story is the one that we had yesterday that I teased. Are you ready for it?
Hybrid piggies, yeah.
Yeah, British Columbia residents have been asked to be on the lookout for hybrid pigs. Piggies! Residents in a British Columbia community are being asked to report these sightings. There have been a lot of sightings of feral pigs resulting from escaped domestic pigs breeding with wild boars. Oh, hello, ladies.
Oh, that's what a hybrid is, huh?
That's what a hybrid's all about. Yeah, so again, that's escaped domestic pigs breeding with wild boars. The Columbia Shuswap Invasive Species Society, that's a mouthful, said in a news release that some domesticated pigs are believed to have escaped into the wild during last summer's wildfires, leading to an increase in the local pig population and their feral pigs. The group said feral pigs include wild boars, escaped domestic pigs, and hybrid offspring of the two. So that's what we're looking at. The varied genetics of feral pigs gives rise to a wide range of appearances. They are light reddish brown to white to black in coloring and have coarse dark hair on their bodies. This group said that British Columbia does not have established populations of feral pigs, but they are known to roam the wild in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. Members of the public are being asked to report any feral pig sightings as they are considered to be an invasive animal. Pardon me. That could pose a 911,
I'm seeing a feral pig on I-95.
Are we talking animals? they could pose a danger to local species. So the animals threaten wildlife through predation and decreased biodiversity by outcompeting the native species. So if you're up in British Columbia, see something, say something.
I'll say something. Thank you, Maud. $25. Hello, wow, loves. We adore
day.
You, she writes. Thank
day.
You, Vaughn.
You made my day.
Yeah, she made my day, too. What a lovely thing. And Doug slapping down $5.
Doug,
you guys are
thank
awesome.
You so much.
So now we have Wes, Doug, and Maud supporting the After Party Live. Thank you to all of you. Let's keep it with the pigs. This Kevin Bacon. His pig is named Kevin Bacon.
Oh, I
there
think
he
we
is.
Reported on this before. I forget which show. Was it our show?
Kevin
or maybe another
Bacon.
Different show.
Maybe there's more than one pig named Kevin Bacon.
Oh, that's, I mean, probably, it, that's probably true.
It's a pretty cool name for a pig.
Yeah, yeah.
He was not home. He was on the run. He was on the lam, as it were. He's from Kenosha County in Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. So he likes cheese.
He's a 450-pound porker, and he wandered away from his pen last week, and then he just kind of kept going, went on down the road. He was caught on the family that owns him or cares for him, security camera. And then apparently he went up to these people's house. He was caught on their security camera. The man that owns the home says, my wife spotted an unusual shaped figure in our driveway camera walking along our garage. He ended up coming up right to our back door. And they say, well, what do you do when you have a pig visiting you on a Friday night? He said, my wife started feeding him right away. That's what she does with every animal that comes to our backyard. They gave him apples, rice cakes, tomatoes, carrots. And then they tried to figure out, what are they going to do with this pig? He lives 38 miles south of Milwaukee. So this man was calling his farmer friends, but there really weren't any farms nearby his house. But then he called a friend who not only knew the pig's owner, but had his phone number. This is what happens when you live in a small area like this, right? The owner was out of town, but they said they would appreciate it if they could lure the pig back to the pen. So that's what they spent their Friday night doing. And it turns out the pig is partial, Kevin Bacon, to cookies, marshmallows, and sweets. And so that's what they did. They lured him back to his pen using Oreos. They lured him down a trail along a side road. The sheriff even came out to escort this whole party for safety reasons. And apparently the Oreos did what they were supposed to do. They managed to get this pig right back to his pen. Look at that. Wes says, domestic pigs will revert to boar-like features in as little as 2 generations. Oh, God.
You know, fun fact, wow. This also applies to men.
Mm. Oh, is that true? We can lure you with Oreos?
No, that will revert to boar-like
your
behavior.
Boar-like features, yes.
Probably in less than 2 generations.
2.5 hours it took them to lure Kevin Bacon back to his pen. About a mile. It was dark. It was night. But finally, this gentle giant was returned. Beth Farmer, the hell with Archie. Feed yourselves, she writes.
Whoa, 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 whoa. I mean, I like kitties, but Archie's been a good boy lately.
Beth Farmer for $50. Beth will be sponsoring our Thursday trivia segment today.
Well, thank you, Beth. I appreciate it.
Right? Because we have a new policy on the After Party, $50 or more, and you're the sponsor of a segment. So, Beth Farmer, thank you very much. We appreciate your contribution to the show.
Okay, let's make sure we make a note of that. We don't have an Albert, so let me go on. We don't have a part-time producer, so we'll...
No.
Do-do-do-do-do-do. Okay, we don't want to forget.
Okay, here we
okay.
go.
Okay, we're good. Thank you, Beth. That's huge. That's huge. You're the huge soda. Huge soda. Get it?
Yes.
Sorry, couldn't resist. Dad
joke. Good.
Okay, next up, do we have here?
Is that your beaver?
Oh, yes, this is the beaver. This is a traffic-blocking beaver, which I think is the best kind of beaver. Oh, wait, no. That's a drop, and that's maybe not accurate.
No.
Police in Washington said a beaver seen blocking traffic on 2 occasions was taken into, quote, protective custody, but a second buck-tooth suspect remains on the loose. This is the Bellingham Police Department. They said that officers responded to Aldrich Road, north of Bellingham, or Bellingham, if you're American, I guess. You know where that is, right?
Of course.
Now, this report was of 2 beavers blocking traffic.
Oh, a double beef.
It was a double beef. One of the animals fled the scene while its larger cohort remained behind in the road. Oh, man, he or she just left his or her partner behind. The second, I'm being very careful. I don't want to misgender these animals. The second beaver also fled while officers were awaiting assistance from the Humane Society and Washington's Fish and Wildlife personnel. The larger beaver reappeared the next day near Meridian and Telegraph Roads and proceeded to be a traffic hazard, according to police. The beaver was taken into protective custody and transported to Fish and Wildlife, their facilities there for examination. Hopefully, it will get the help it needs and give up living dangerously on the streets of Bellingham, according to police. Poor girl.
Little beaver.
Beaver. Beaver fever.
I was reading, don't judge me. I was reading a book, like it's a sexy romance book the other day.
Okay.
And
where's this
going? It was the stupidest book. But this person was auditioning for something and was asked that.
Something? If, on a couch?
Kind of.
Okay.
He was asked whether he has a name for his male member. And he said, I do. And it's Justin Bieber. Yeah. Justin Bieber.
Oh, so is that like a homophobic thing?
I guess so. I didn't think of it like that. Anyway. Okay. We move on. My apologies. Okay.
Yeah. Before we get demonetized.
Have you ever been to the Bellagio in Las
Vegas?
That's
the one with the fancy fountain here, right?
It's a fancy fountain you're seeing here. It's a light show. It's a water show. Yeah.
You end up like standing around for a long time waiting for it to turn on.
Yeah. But it brings a lot of tourists. And so it's, you know, it makes the hotel a lot of money. Well, they had to shut her down yesterday because a rare bird decided to land right in the Bellagio fountain pool there.
Oh, I see a little guy on the bottom. Yeah, let's get a closer look.
There he is. Yeah, he or she, I don't know what type of there. That's beautiful.
They.
Thank you. They.
Sorry, shouldn't be.
They are a yellow-billed loon. Very rare. And so they turned off the hotel casino's water show. They had to call out wildlife biologists to come capture this yellow-billed loon. And they took it unharmed to an unspecified remote location where they expected
to... What, were they going to waterboard it?
No.
What kind of language is that?
It's on a migratory trip. So it's supposed to be migrating north. So they think that it's going to keep on its journey, right? But they paused the fountains after the loon found comfort on the Las Vegas Lake Bellagio. So the Nevada Department of Wildlife... removed it, and the choreographed water spray show resumed in the afternoon, but it was closed down for a couple of hours. This yellow-billed loon that you see here in the Bellagio, Lake Bellagio, is an international species of concern. It's one of the 10 rarest birds that regularly breed on the mainland U.S. The concerned birders were asking wildlife officials to intervene in all this. They think the bird sought shelter from a storm. And they say it's not unusual for migratory birds to visit the Las Vegas area. They normally nest around the Arctic Circle in the winter, in Canada, the U.S., Norway, or Siberia. Somebody said they think they saw the same bird a week ago at a bird preserve near Las Vegas. They think maybe it's lost and disoriented. So hopefully they'll be able... What now?
Have you seen this bird? I want to get a business card like that. Concerned birder.
That's really funny. Yes. Anyway, so they took him to safety. Hopefully he'll have food and quiet surroundings and be able to reorient and get back on his merry way.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. That is our animal segment for today.
That is our animal segment, and it is sponsored by Pamela Kirby, who, again, wants us to know all about the Ventana Wildlife Society, Ventana WS, as in Sam, or Society, VentanaWS.org. Please check out the site.
Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you. If you like the show and you want to support it, please do so, but also... please click like and subscribe. If you haven't clicked the like button yet, that really helps us out. That is free. Subscribe to the show as well. And then share it all over the place on social media, Facebook, X, what have you. We're trying to grow it, and we appreciate your help.
share it all over, like these tumbleweeds?
Like these tumbleweeds. Look at that. They almost go up to the roof. They do go up to the roof. We've seen another story like this. They get these windstorms, and sometimes the tumbleweeds are all blown into this village. Towns in Utah inundated with tumbleweeds that have blocked roads, surrounded houses, and buried cars after a really strong storm. This is South Jordan. It lies south of Salt Lake City, and they are cleaning up now after really strong winds blew thousands of tumbleweeds through the streets. The weeds form piles up to 3 meters high. That's 10 feet in America.
That's 10 feet in American.
In American, that'd be 10 feet. They had to plow through the weeds with hose and shovels before
with
city
what?
Workers... Hose?
They plowed through with...
They plowed through with hose and shovels before the city workers arrived with garbage trucks to clean this mess up. They're expected to post a list of sites for tumbleweed disposal. There's so many of them that people are having to pile them into trucks on their own and haul them away. So right after, by the way, the tumbleweeds came, snow came. So then the tumbleweeds, what an utter mess.
It provides scaffolding for the snow.
I guess so. Yeah. These tumbleweeds are formed by invasive weeds called Russian thistle. And every winter after the plants die, the bushy parts of them snap off at the root and blow away, tumbling across the landscape to disperse their seeds. Isn't that interesting?
Bushy part, seeds, hose.
Yeah.
Moving on. Sorry.
It's okay. I understand.
I apologize.
I've done it myself.
This story is kind of interesting. Where does lightning strike? A new map reveals unprecedented detail of a 36.8 million strikes of lightning. It's been a warm day, maybe even a little humid, and the tall clouds in the distance remind you of a cauliflower. You hear a sharp crack, like the sound of a batter hitting a home run, or a low rumble, reminiscent of a truck rumbling down the highway. Distant thunderstorm, alive with lightning, is making itself known. Lightning flashes in thunderstorms of at least 60 times per second happen somewhere around the planet, sometimes even near the North Pole. That's interesting. Each giant spark of electricity travels through the atmosphere at 200,000 miles per hour. Wow.
Wow.
It's hotter than the surface of the sun and delivers thousands of times more electricity than the power outlet that charges your smartphone. That's why lightning is so dangerous. Lightning kills or injures about 250,000 people around the world every year. Isn't that crazy? 250,000 people every year. Most frequently in developing countries where many people work outside without lightning-safe shelters nearby. In the U.S., an average of 28 people were killed by lightning every year between 2006 and 2023. Each year, insurance pays about $1 billion in claims for lightning damage and around 4 million acres of land burn in lightning-caused wildfires. And we know about that here in PG&E country.
Mm-hmm.
Yet estimates of U.S. lightning strikes have varied widely from about 25 million a year, a number meteorologists have cited since the 90s, to 40 million a year reported by the CDC. Well, that's interesting. I wonder why the CDC is involved. That complicates lightning safety and protection efforts. So they've done this research to get a clearer picture of how often lightning strikes. They first start by defining what a lightning strike is. Lightning flash and is all the ground to earth, flash of light that happens like 1 second and losing my place here.
That's
a lightning flash and is all the cloud to ground. This doesn't make any sense. I'm going to skip that sentence.
Mm.
Each stroke can hit one or more ground strike points, and there could be multiple strokes in the same channel. Lightning is a large electrical discharge trying to dissipate the electricity in a cloud. So if there's a lot of electricity built up, there can be a lot of lightning to get rid of. Over 6 years of data from the National Lightning Detection Network found that the U.S. averages 23.5 million flashes, 55 million strokes, and 36 million ground strike points every year. So I'm going to move around. I'm going to move on here. The basic ingredients for thunderstorms are warm and moist air near the ground with cooler, drier air above it. And it's a way for it to lift the moist air. Anywhere those ingredients are present, lightning can occur. This happens most frequently near the Gulf Coast, mm-hmm. where the sea breeze helps trigger thunderstorms most days in summer. Florida, shout out to Wes, in particular, is a hot spot for cloud-to-ground lightning strikes. Yeah. And the Miami-Fort Lauderdale area alone has 120,000 lightning strikes, at least in 2023. So there's this new map. If you want to see it, just Google lightning strike map, and you can see where it's more prevalent. And Louisiana, the basically all around the Gulf, you'll see it's like red and orange. So
it's kind
Florida,
of rare
Florida
here
is the hot spot.
In Northern California, we don't get that much lightning.
No, but when we do, especially in the city, there was a lightning strike somewhere close. Like it, I don't know. I didn't find any evidence of it,
but like
all
recently.
Yeah, there was one a couple weeks ago, I think. Oh, well, while you were in Monterey.
Okay.
That was a couple weeks ago, right? And then there was one that was close by. I think it was in the fall. And car alarms went off. It sounded like an explosion. And Archie was scared and like ran from the front of the apartment to the back. It sounded like a bomb went off.
I remember one night I was driving home from KGO and it was a dry lightning storm. And I was in that space between Novato and Petaluma with the rolling hills. And there were lightning strikes everywhere, all over the hills. It was quite a ride, man.
Novato Narrows, the freeway project that has been going on since I was born, maybe? Seems like it.
Forever.
How long does it take to widen a freeway by one lane?
A long time. I have this story. You know, I really dig these animal behavior stories.
Yeah.
So fascinating. And there's a story about orca whales. Now, we thought orca whales hunted in packs, and they do, right? Well, they also are solo hunters. And this orca was observed hunting and killing a great white shark by itself for the first time. These pods of orcas are known to attack great white sharks, but usually they do it in groups. But this orca has been observed eating a great white shark for the first time.
What?
After killing it by itself. This happened off the coast of Mossel Bay in South Africa. And it represents, they say, unprecedented behavior, underscoring the exceptional proficiency of the killer whale or orca. I like to call them orcas and not killer whales.
Do they specify whether... I'm sorry, I'm ignorant here. Mm-hmm. Do they normally, as a pack, kill great whites?
Yeah.
So the story is that that he was by himself.
That's right. That's the difference in behavior.
That's the distinction here.
So usually they work in groups to catch their prey. And what they eat most often, sea lions, seals, sharks, even other whales, right? Hunting together in a pod, usually they surround their prey and then they use their combined strength and intelligence to attack.
Right.
But there's two orcas that have researchers have been watching do this a lot. And they've named one port and the other starboard. And they say these two have been hunting and killing the great white sharks in South Africa since 2017. Well, now, apparently,
one
of them...
So the enemy of my enemy is my friend?
Port is now moving on to a solo career, right?
Oh, so Port is like Harry Styles or Beyonce.
That's exactly what's happening. Port has decided that he can work alone. And he incapacitated and then consumed an 8-foot-long juvenile white shark in only 2 minutes. And then he carried its liver around in his mouth. Apparently, they have a taste for the liver of great white sharks.
Did Guinness World Records record this?
They did not.
For some reason, they didn't go out there.
I'm sorry. I've blamed Port for this, and it's Starboard. Starboard is the one who did it.
Oh, Starboard. Well, that makes all the difference.
Starboard did it. It was a solo career for Starboard.
I can see how you get them confused. They look very similar.
They witnessed a white shark's fin break the surface of the water, and they were excited about it at first, and then they realized this is a bad scene because Starboard swiftly approached, rapidly preyed on the shark, and then, again, within 2 minutes, it was all over. He took the shark liver and then swam past the boat. They say it was one unforgettable scene. Unforgettable scene.
Calvin makes a good point. Animals must attack in order to survive, Kim. Why do you got to hate on Starboard?
It's just a new, phenomenon, I guess, to us. where we can document and Orca.
You used the word blame, and I think that was a little harsh.
Oh, well.
Starboard's just trying to exist. Beth making a point here. That area of South Africa had great whites jumping out of the water.
Yeah.
Maybe that shark was distracted.
Maybe. It didn't see a starboard coming. But what researchers say is there's this shifting dynamic. And this is interesting because when you think about, you know, the thing you most don't want to see in the ocean, it's usually a great white, right?
Right.
Like, you see an orca coming, they don't usually kill humans in the wild, whatnot.
Well, I think, they got the memo about SeaWorld.
Is that now they're pissed?
Do you see Blackfish? You see the documentary?
Totally. Yeah.
I think the orcas got the memo.
The orcas are not pleased.
Mm-mm.
There is a shifting dynamic at sea, is what researchers think. And that this type of behavior shift really helps put it all into context. Orcas may, they say, displace sharks as the apex predator. So understanding the dynamics at play as these orcas prey on large sharks underscores the need for conservation strategies to be adapted quickly as the environment and the ecosystem changes and the behavior changes. Just an interesting thing. And who knew that it was specific to orcas that they like the shark's liver the best?
Excellent. Time to take a break.
Let's do it.
Hey, everybody. It's your friend Satan. Love me or hate me, the After Party Live is underwritten by our audience. And without you, this show wouldn't be possible. If you can contribute $10, $15, $20, $666, it would keep this party very, very hot and heavy. Any dollar amount is appreciated and it all adds up, isn't that the truth? The PayPal link can be found in the About section of the YouTube channel or at the bottom of the show description. I know what you're thinking, why should I be tempted by the devil? But come on guys, it's not like I'm asking you for your soul.
A party where you don't even have to leave the house. You could be naked for all we care. The After Party, live.
Thank you, Satan, for that wonderful break that you've shared with us. Some thank yous to dispense.
Yeah, let's do our super stickers first. We want to thank Wes. Thank you, Wes, contributing every day. Doug, contributing all the time.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It. Maud Day coming in with $25.
Maud.
Hello, loves. We adore you. We adore you, Maud.
You
thank you much.
Yeah, thank
Beth
you.
Beth Farmer, come on.
Beth.
Like a good neighbor. The hell with Archie. Feed yourselves. Archie has been a good boy, so we'll include some scraps for Archie.
Huge thank you, Beth.
Thank you, Beth. You are a huge soda. And we have ongoing contributors.
Kim. We do. Harry M. and Geraldine J. Huge, huge, huge thank you to both of you for your continued support of the After Party Live. It really means a lot.
Yeah, and Geraldine has contributed $50 for a future sponsorship.
Oh,
thank you, Geraldine. That was huge. That came in this morning.
Okay.
And we thank you, Geraldine, and we will figure out which segment you want to sponsor. And again, we appreciate that. If you want to sponsor a segment, $50 or more, if you do it on PayPal, they take less of a cut. So we prefer if you contribute on PayPal. That helps the show. That really helps the show. It makes a difference in terms of whether or not we can keep this viable. So thank you so much to everybody who's contributed. And I think it's time for trivia. Speaking of trivia and sponsorships.
Yep. The Thursday trivia or Trivia Thursday is sponsored by Beth Farmer on the After Party Live. Category today is American presidents.
Oh, did you tell John Rotham? I'm glad. I hope you didn't tell John Rotham because he would spoil it for everybody.
Yeah, he would come and scoop the whole contest. We can't have that.
He specializes in vice presidents, but he also he knows a lot about the president of the United States,
Cindy
of the United States.
Loving the show $10.
I was still mocking John Rotham.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've interrupted you to thank our friend Cindy.
It's not the president. It's the president of the United States. Okay.
Thank you, Cindy, for the
$10. Cindy, thank you
sticker.
So much. Love your show.
Huge,
love you, Cindy. $10.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so
what
much.
What a cool thing. Love that.
You guys always come through when we need it most.
Okay. Who wants to go first?
I think I went first last week, and since I picked the category, I will defer to the excellent Kim McAllister.
Mm-hmm. Which U.S. president went by the nickname Dutch?
Ooh. I have a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
that this is going to be
feeling.
I have a feeling that this is going to be a very difficult category, and I have a feeling that I'm not going to get many of these, which is embarrassing because I'm a history major, but okay. Dutch. Have I stalled long enough?
Which U.S. president went by the nickname?
I'm just going to guess JFK.
It is not JFK.
Everyone's guessing Reagan.
It is Reagan. It is Ronald Reagan. I don't know who got it first.
I think it was Jim.
Was it Jim? Yeah.
I might be showing my age here. Was that common? Like, was that commonly known in the
80s? It was common knowledge, yeah. Okay. Pauline got it, Calvin, SJ, Beth, Reagan, Trevor got it, yeah. Lori got it. Well done, everybody. Well done.
Judy and Louise.
We're off to a good start. I was chastised asking questions that people would never know the answer to. So, see, look, I did
all of them. I'm just saying a lot of them were unanswerable. Yeah. That's why we want to do a category like this. It's, you know, at least people have a chance, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Which president served in Congress after his time in office and suffered a fatal stroke on the floor of the House chamber? Again, which president served in Congress after his time in office and suffered a fatal stroke on the floor of the House chamber? Wow, Jim, you are quick.
It was John Quincy Adams?
Quincy Adams, and I have a little information here. He was the sixth president, born under British rule, the son of a president and a president himself. Adams capped off his career by serving 18 years in Congress on
February 21st,
1848. After one of the first votes of the day, Adams was at his seat in the House chamber when he collapsed, having suffered from a massive stroke. Adams was taken into the rotunda and placed on a sofa in front of the east door in the hope that fresh air would revive him. Seeing no improvement, however, Adams was taken into the Speaker's office where he died 2 days later. His memorable last words were, "This is the last of Earth, but I am composed."
Wow.
That's profound.
Next question. Actor Paul Giamatti portrayed which U.S. president in the 2008 eponymous Emmy-winning miniseries?
Oh, I feel this like on the tip of my tongue.
Paul Giamatti, 2008. Which miniseries, which president did he play?
Thomas Jefferson?
Yes, Jim. That's correct. Jay Adams. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
That's exactly right.
I wanted to say, who's the lightning guy? But he wasn't a president.
Thomas Edison?
No, the guy with the key. I'm having a mind blank.
Thomas Edison?
No, the guy who discovered Benjamin Franklin.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Edison was the light bulb, not the key.
No, my bad.
Yeah, Ben Franklin. Thank you, Mars. okay, moving on. I'm not going to do well today. Okay. Which president was first to be sworn in by his nickname? Which president was the first to be sworn in by his nickname? Someone's going to get this. Probably Jim.
Jimmy Carter?
There you go. Kim got it. Congratulations.
Oh,
Jimmy
I got
Carter.
It. That's right. Yeah.
39th president. I probably put it in your head by saying Jim. Did I? Make you think of Jimmy Carter? Born James Earl Carter Jr., he was sworn in as Jimmy, which made him the first and the only president so far to be sworn in by his nickname.
Okay.
Does Trump have any nicknames? I think he does.
I don't know. What do you want to call him?
Moving on.
I'm gonna throw you a softball.
Thank you.
Which founding father and future U.S. president wrote the first draft of the Declaration of Independence?
Repeat it, please.
Which founding father and future U.S. president wrote the first draft of the Declaration of Independence?
I think it's Thomas Jefferson.
You are correct.
I'm getting self-conscious because I didn't study this part of history very well.
Mm.
The problem when you're a history major is that people think you know all history, and that's not true. Like, I specialized in California history.
Deidre and Mama got it. Jim, SJ, you guys are doing really well. Yep. Sandy, well done, people. Okay.
Lori, I feel attacked.
All right, your turn.
She asked if I'm over-caffeinated. Nailed it. Perhaps due to chronic depression, this president is said to have slept up to 11 hours a day and always took an afternoon nap lasting at least 1 to 2 hours.
Roosevelt.
Wrong. Perhaps due to chronic depression, this president is said to have slept up to 11 hours a day and always took an afternoon nap lasting at least 1 to 2 hours.
Was it Gerald Ford?
No, but we have an answer. SJ Lola has it.
Coolidge.
With Coolidge, Calvin Coolidge, 30th president. Coolidge had a penchant for hour-long naps after lunch, a habit that earned him amused scorn from his contemporaries. But when the president missed a nap, he would fall asleep in afternoon meetings. Some political scientists argued that Coolidge's affinity for sleep became more extreme after the death of his son. The president's slumbering expanded into a pre-lunchtime nap, a 2 to 3 hour post-lunch nap, and 11 hours of shut-eye every night.
Wow. He slept a lot.
That sounds like depression.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Which U.S. president's favorite refrain was "speak softly and carry a big stick"?
Teddy Roosevelt.
That's right. You got it right. Yeah. That was way too easy.
Hey! Let me have my moment. Jesus Christ. Okay. Here's your inventor. You said Edison, right? This is a different inventor. Famed inventor Alexander Graham Bell tried to save the life of this president after he was shot by an assassin.
Lincoln.
Famed inventor Alexander Graham Bell tried to save the life of this president after he was shot by an assassin. And we have an answer. I think we have a resident expert.
Garfield.
Jim comes in with Garfield.
Okay.
James Garfield, he was the 20th president. Do you want this more information or am I boring
please,
you?
Please. No, bring it.
On July 2nd, 1881, President Garfield was shot in the back by an assassin in a train station in Washington, D.C. The president lingered. His condition wavered until he died on September 19th. During the course of the months-long ordeal, Alexander Graham Bell, who was working at a lab in Washington, D.C. at the time, was appalled by the daily drama unfolding in the newspapers. The president's physician was obsessed with probing Garfield's wound in order to extract the bullet. Bell thought to develop a metal-detecting device that could find the bullet so that Bliss could remove it more easily. Bell made his first attempt to find the bullet but ran into problems. He tinkered with the device and returned to the White House in August. His search for the bullet was now hampered by Bliss, who was convinced that the bullet was located somewhere on the right side of Garfield's torso and refused to entertain any notions to the contrary. Bell was not able to find the bullet with his metal detector because he was looking in the wrong place. When the president's body was autopsied, it was found that the bullet had lodged itself on the left side of Garfield's chest, exactly opposite of where Bliss had contended it was.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. A lot of drama in the early years.
Known as one of the most scandalous events in American politics, the Teapot Dome involved the bribery of which presidential administration?
Oh, I should know this and I forget. Oh.
The Teapot Dome. Which presidential administration?
I think Deidre is right. Is Deidre right?
What does she say?
And, Hoover?
No.
No? Jim says Harding.
Yes, that's right. Warren G. Harding. Mm-hmm.
Now, there are accusations in the chat that Jim is actually John Rothman.
I don't think so. But he's acting like it today.
Maybe Jim is actually John Rothman using a fake profile.
It's possible, yeah.
Yeah.
Jim's doing pretty well in the presidential trivia.
To be honest with you, I never really found presidential history like interesting. Like,
oh, I do.
The 50,000 foot view, but not like the detail.
I find it fascinating. The personal details about them. I love it.
I would just glaze over and I had a hard time with presidential history, obviously. That's why I picked the category today.
Yeah.
Okay. According to his wishes, this president was buried wrapped in an American flag and his head rested on a copy of the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, I don't know, but I love this, knowing this.
According to his wishes, this president was buried wrapped in the American flag and his head rested on a copy of the U.S. Constitution. I have a feeling that Jim's going to get it.
Was it Eisenhower?
No. Earlier. Dieter pointing out that Jim said he has an M.A. in political science.
Okay. Nice, Jim.
Let's see if we have
an answer
here.
It has to be something really, really patriotic.
Yeah, so you want the question?
Was it a founding father?
No, I don't think. No.
Was it? It wasn't Thomas Jefferson.
No, came a little later. Came a little later. It was 1800s. 1800. I don't think anyone's going to get this. So I'll just tell you. What Andrew Johnson, 17th president. Johnson died on July 31st, 1875 in Tennessee. According to his wishes, a small funeral was held in the Masonic tradition. taking place under a willow tree that the president had planted himself from a slip of a willow tree at the grave of Napoleon on the island of St. Helena, or Helena. He was buried on his land, now the Andrew Johnson National Cemetery, wrapped in the American flag made of silk, with his copy of the U.S. Constitution placed under his head as he rested, or as he requested. So there you go. It was what? Andrew Johnson.
With a difference of only 113,000 votes, 113,000 votes, between which two candidates is the closest presidential election in U.S. history? What two candidates?
The closest would be Bush v. Gore. Right?
No.
That wasn't the closest? Jim's saying JFK Nixon.
That's a correct.
Wow, Jim.
Jim is sweeping
it. If we're doing trivia at the Red Jack Saloon, I
want
to be on
I want Jim on my team. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Which president worked to save football from being banned in the U.S.? Talk about American. Which president worked to save football from being banned in the United States?
It wasn't Gerald Ford, was it? Because he was a football player.
No, it's not. It's not Ford.
Probably it's not.
It's earlier. It's
earlier, yeah.
1800s.
Mm.
Or I should say he was born in the 1800s. Sorry. This happened after the turn of the century. Just after the turn of the century. I'm giving a lot of clues.
Cleveland?
Jim has it.
Oh,
Theodore Roosevelt. Yeah, okay. At the turn of the 20th century, America's gridirons were brutal. Armed with little protective equipment, football players suffered gruesome injuries and even death. In 1904, there were 18 fatalities reported during that one season alone. Reports of all this bloodshed led to an outcry for reform or abolishment of the game. The crisis became such an issue that President Roosevelt got involved. He had been an enthusiastic supporter of football, but acknowledged that reform was needed. His son, Theodore Jr., then played on the Harvard freshman team, so he had a personal interest in reforming the game. Mm-hmm. Fresh off the heels of negotiating the end of the Russo-Japanese War, Roosevelt met with the head coaches and representatives of the premier colleges, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, all at the White House in 1905, urging them to curb excessive violence in football. The schools, in return, released a statement condemning brutality and pledged to keep the game clean and fair.
All right.
So, yeah.
Mine is much less important.
I never heard that before.
Tabby and Dixie are said to be the first cats to live at the White House. To which president did they belong? Tabby and Dixie. First cats, first White House kitty cats.
Tabby and Dixie. FDR?
No.
No. In the meantime, Luis with $5 because kids, both human and feline, are expensive. LOL. Thanks, Kim and John.
Thank you,
ain't
Luis.
That the truth?
Like, very much.
I go to Target all the time, and it's like I'll spend $90 on Archie and like $10 on myself.
Aw. It's because you're a good cat daddy.
Well, it's because everyone's so generous. Sorry, where were we?
Anybody get it in the chat?
It was the kitties. The kitties.
Kitties. The two first cats to live in the White House.
Bush won, Lori's guessing. I have a feeling
Jim doesn't know this one. No.
Oh,
I was stumped the expert.
Okay, can you give us a clue? Is it modern history? Is it 20th century or onward? Or is it?
The only clues I could give you would totally give it away. But since
away,
nobody knows,
away.
I will say.
You can't tell us if it was olden times?
It's olden times to me. Civil War era.
Oh, okay. Lincoln.
Yes.
That gives it away. Jim got it, though, first. You got it
yes,
before.
It was Lincoln.
That's interesting. Yeah. First kitties.
Cats to live. And again, it was Tabby and Dixie. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. But Dixie as in like the South? Interesting. Oh, maybe he was trying to be a uniter. He's trying to bring all sides together. I want to move quickly just because there's no time. There's no time. Which president changed the name of the presidential mountain retreat, Shangri-La, to Camp David and named it after his grandson? which president changed the name of the presidential mountain retreat Shangri-La to Camp David, naming it after his grandson?
God, I don't know the answer.
Let's see if, let's see. I've got answers coming in really fast. I think Deidre has it first.
Eisenhower. Okay.
I think, she, yes.
Right on.
Yes. Deidre got it first. Congratulations, Deidre. Camp David, a retreat used by the President of the United States, is nestled in Maryland's, I don't know how you say this, Catoctin Mountains. Mm. The facility was originally built in 1938 by the Works Progress Administration, says the WPA, right? When everyone needed a job back then, as a camp for government employees, and was later taken over by FDR, who named it Shangri-La in reference to the mountain kingdom in the novel Lost Horizon from 1933. Mm-hmm. When Eisenhower took office in 1953, he planned to close the mountain compound and divest the government of other needless luxuries. However, Attorney General Herbert Brownell petitioned to keep the retreat. After a visit with Eisenhower, the president agreed. Eisenhower renamed it Camp David after his then 5-year-old grandson, Dwight David Eisenhower II.
Mm-hmm. I would disagree, Pamela. You think you were late and you can't play. Please play anyway. Play along with us.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is kind of weird that they named it after his own kid. I don't think a government facility should be named after anyone in your family. That was kind of lame.
Who is the only single U.S. president to get married while in the White House? Who is the only U.S. president that was single to get married while in the White House? Not that you could get married while you're married, but whatever.
Well, it's happened before. Mm. Cindy's guessing Wilson.
It wasn't.
Natalie guessing Garfield.
It was not.
John has no guess. I have no idea.
Mm. There is a G in the name.
Grant?
No. It's rather a sesame name.
I don't know. Oh, Grover.
Thank you. Grover Cleveland was the only U.S. president to get married while in the White House. Yes.
okay, cool. And Grover, Pauline was the first in the chat to get it.
Well done,
okay,
Pauline.
Cool. Which president took the oath of office in his own home? Which president took the oath of office in his own home?
George Washington.
Nope.
Thomas Jefferson.
Nope.
Washington Adams?
Nope.
It was either before the White House was built or after it burned down, right?
No, in his own house. It's not connected to the White House.
Well, they wouldn't have done it.
Or there's another scenario you're not aware of, Kim. There's
What's
a reason,
the answer, Jim?
There's a
I don't
reason
know.
This place is fun. there's a reason why this happened in his house. And I don't think anyone's going to get it, because if Jim didn't get it, we're all out of luck.
We're screwed.
Okay, this is a very definite John Rothman answer. Chester A. Arthur, 21st president, when President James Garfield succumbed to his wounds from an assassin's bullet in 1881, Vice President Arthur was at his home in New York. In the early mornings of September 20th, Arthur took the oath of office as the 21st President of the United States in a private ceremony at his home, a 4-story brownstone townhouse on Lexington Avenue in New York.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
After being widowed, which president married his first wife's niece? Ew! After being widowed, which president married his first wife's niece?
I have no idea. Deidre guessing Wilson.
Not Wilson.
President Creep. So there was a Creep before Trump.
Apparently there was.
We're getting guesses for FDR.
I guess that was okay Trevor. Back in the day. It's not.
Calvin saying Trump.
No. Good answer, though.
Heather asking, are they from Alabama?
I don't know where this person's from, but I'll go ahead and give you the answer since it's a slow one. This is Benjamin Harrison.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now every time I see Harrison Street in San Francisco, I'm going to look at it differently. this is relevant for me. Out of 5 presidents to have worn a beard, this president is purported to have had the longest. the longest Lincoln. Beard.
What?
Out of the five presidents to have worn a beard, this president is purported to have had the longest.
Cleveland?
Nope. We're getting guesses for Hayes. Nope. Taft? Nope. Oh, I'm sorry. Hayes is correct.
Hayes is correct. Okay. Is it Rutherford B?
Mm. Yeah, Rutherford B. Hayes.
This will be easy for Jim and some others. Which two former presidents died hours apart July 4th, 1826? Same day. Hours apart. July 4th, 1826. Which two former presidents died hours apart July 4th, 1826?
I know one of them's Jefferson, but I can't remember who the other one is. It's somebody from the stage play in New York, right? Beth is guessing. Well, actually, Jim has it first. Jefferson Adams.
That's correct.
Yeah. Got half of it. Did I get partial credit?
When I was in eighth grade, my U.S. history teacher had us memorize all the U.S. presidents to a song. So if I could remember the song, it goes, Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Adams, Jackson. I won't do the whole thing, but that's kind of how it went. Do you remember?
Yeah. Thank you.
Anyway, yeah, you're welcome.
Coming towards the end here, I have two more. Okay. Which president was a Rhodes Scholar? This is easy.
Clinton.
That was easy.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Oxford University.
What is the maximum number of years a U.S. president can serve in office?
Maximum 8.
Has and can.
Oh, has.
Well,
in the past?
The question is, what is the maximum number of years a U.S. president can serve in office? So
currently?
It
total
doesn't say
8. It used to be 12.
It's 10. Sorry, I said it too soon. 10. Yeah, Sandy says 10.
10?
It's 10. So you could serve the last 2 years of someone else's term and then run twice.
Huh. I did not know that.
But if you, I'm assuming, tell me if I'm wrong, Jim, if you served 3 years of someone else's term, you could only run once. Because the maximum number of years you can serve is 10. That's it.
I'm starting to question the education that I received, the public education I received in Petaluma. I'd never even heard that before.
I had not either. I will not lie to you.
Okay.
We'll have to do some research and make sure it's right.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You think that would come up from time to time.
You'd think, but it hasn't.
Okay. This is my last question. How many do you have left?
I have as many as you want me to have as few.
We have a few more minutes, I think. Mm-hmm. People in the chat can decide whether we keep going. My last question. Who was the only man to be elected twice as vice president and twice as president of the United States? President of the United States.
Wait, twice as vice president and?
Twice as vice president of the United States and twice as president of the United States.
Oh. Can't be George Bush because he was vice president. But he wasn't president twice.
Correct.
Hmm.
Let's see. We have a winner. Not surprising.
Really?
Jim Nixon. Shields. Nixon.
Okay.
He was a crook.
A member of the Whig Party, which U.S. president was the last non-Democrat or Republican elected to office?
Repeat.
A member of the Whig Party, which U.S. president was the last non-Democrat or Republican elected to office?
Oh, this must have been before, like, the Free Soil Party.
Excuse me.
Getting a guess for, is it Tyler? Karen's guess
is Tyler.
It was
not.
We've got guesses for Taft, Lincoln, Buchanan.
Mm-mm.
I should know the answer to for 500, Kim.
This is Millard Fillmore.
It's Fillmore. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I have come to the conclusion that I don't know anything about American presidents.
Should I ask you one more?
Why not?
Which president was nicknamed the Little Magician?
The Little Magician?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who was little, but I don't think I really know. You only see their faces, you know?
Yeah. It's Martin Van Buren.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten that.
And I'll ask you, the last one will be easy for everyone. Okay. Along with Alexander Hamilton, this president is considered the father of the Constitution.
Along with Hamilton?
Mm-hmm.
Jefferson.
Washington and Adams, Jefferson. Madison. Yes, James Madison.
Madison papers.
Yep.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay.
Well, and I fail.
Thus concludes.
I'm going to remediation.
Thank you for picking the topic. That was fun.
Yeah. Next time I'm going to pick a topic that I know something about.
Congratulations to all everyone who played. Thank you for playing along with us. Thank
so
you
many
for
people
all the
to thank.
Yeah, thank you for all the contributions to the show. Wes with $5, coming in with $5. Doug Koch as well. Maud with $25 as well. And Beth with $50.
Woohoo!
Thank
sponsor
you guys
of trivia,
so,
Beth
so
Farmer.
Much. Mm-hmm. Cindy for $10. We really appreciate that. Luis with $5 and a funny comment. And Deidre, $5. I look forward to trivia so much, she writes. What was that? She said, I just hung up on a work call, but I love that you love trivia, Deidre. Yeah, she hung up on a work call to play trivia with us.
Oh,
I love
cool.
that.
And we want to thank our ongoing contributors, Harry M. and Geraldine J. for contributing $50 for a future sponsorship of a mm-hmm. segment. You guys, those sponsorships are really going to help us meet our goal, yeah. our fundraising goal. So thank you so much.
And our big thanks to Beth Farmer for sponsoring American Presidents Thursday Trivia today. We will be right back here tomorrow with a whole nother After Party Live. And I will be on Nicki Maduro's show tomorrow. We have Tim Sika and John Rothman on the Nicki Maduro show. Nicki is off, so I will be filling in. So I hope to see you then, and then right back here on the After Party after Mark Thompson. Thanks for being here, everybody, and have a really great afternoon.
Have a great afternoon. No bye. More coffee for John. Okay, bye.